what? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery. They print $100 and loan it to you. They charge interest on the loan, but don't print the interest, so there'll never be enough money to pay off all the debt. What do you get?
There will never
be enough money to pay off all the debt, ladies and gentlemen. Even the justification of selling our assets in order to do so is absolutely insane, because they deliver dividends to people all the time. Infrastructure, ladies and gentlemen, is the World Bank plan. It's the motto to take over people's countries by reducing their ability to provide their own infrastructure. That's what's going on here with asset sales. Neil, we've still got you on the line here, and we're now joined by the fabulous and illustrious and very dangerous Her Worship, Penny Bright. Welcome back.
Thank you, Penny.
Okay, so Penny, I wanted to get your take on this, the asset sales and where they are up to right now with this court case delaying them.
Well, what happened was on Monday, the 3rd of September, here were four of us having a protest outside the offices of Mercury Energy, which is 100% owned by Mighty River Power, and that was the first of the electricity assets that the government wanted to sell this year. And we hear the great news that this sell-off has been delayed. So we were absolutely thrilled about that, because what we've been trying to do is to throw a spanner in the works by encouraging people to take the action which cannot be ignored. We're trying to encourage 100,000 people to switch off Mercury Energy. And in so doing, what that will do is cause Mighty River Power, who owns Mercury Energy, it'll cause their profits to fall, and thus will help make this investment very unattractive. And there is precedent for this, because back in 2008, at a time of financial downturn, Contact Energy, which was already privatised, they doubled directors' fees and they put the prices up 12%. Well, what happened was, in 6 months, over 40,000 customers left Contact Energy and their profits were halved. So what we're doing is absolutely doable. And as someone who's more involved in civil disobedience actions like rates, revolts and water bill boycotts, I have to have a bit of a chuckle to myself that this is actually a state-sanctioned activity, because every 5 minutes when you watch on TV, there are advertisements encouraging people to do exactly what we're encouraging people to do, which is effectively to use the market against the market model.
Well, isn't that called a free market?
Well, what's hilarious is that when you take natural monopolies such as the supply of electricity and water, natural monopolies, when you try to introduce this competitive model, all it does in actual fact is duplicate resources, which puts the price up. Now, back in the bad old inefficient days, and of course inefficient is just corporate speak for we haven't yet got our filthy hands on it, back in the days there was a Department of Electricity and there were power boards. And of course this was inefficient because, like I say, they didn't have their filthy hands on it. So what happened was, there was this division made between electricity generation, transmission, distribution, and retail. So they chopped it up into four different parts, and then they subdivided each of those parts again into different competing companies. Well, you're each with their own, you know, board of directors and officers and God knows what, and it's just a no-brainer. Because, of course, the only thing that did was to massively put the price up. Because back in the bad old inefficient days, I tell you what, you could afford to have the heater on in winter, and you could afford to have a soak and a hot bath. Well, you can't now.
No, you literally can't. And similar stuff has happened in Australia. One of my listeners, Glenn, he's on holiday here in New Zealand at the moment. I met up with him when he landed. And his funny story, Penny, he tells me about his electricity prices, and he goes, oh, they're about $2.50 a quarter or $7.50 a quarter. So it's about $250 a month, $250 Australian dollars. And I go, oh my God, that's pretty insane. I mean, but maybe, you know, when we've had the heater on during the winter and stuff like that, yeah, we could get up to that. And he goes, yeah, but I've got gas heating, and that's only two, wow. and that's really cheap. It's only $2.50 a quarter. It's just like it goes from bad to worse. And that's after John Howard privatised their electricity companies in South Australia. Well, same thing will happen here.
Well, the fact of the matter is that privatisation does put the price up because, of course, you've got shareholders to look after. And the sensible thing to do is to keep essential public services under the essential public service model, which is not profit making. As soon as you start commercialising essential public services, running them on a profit-making basis, which of course the state-owned enterprises are, they're under the commercialised model, and I mean we're still being ripped off blind under the state-owned enterprise model, but when you privatise it, then those profits, then they go offshore, which is arguably even worse, but my considered opinion is get back to what we used to have because it wasn't bloody broken in the first place. Bring back the electricity and bring back power because it wasn't broken. But as far as what else is happening with the asset sales, very, very interesting that that the government is backing off. There's no doubt about it. The more the government's very poll driven, and so part of our what I want to see happen over the next few months, now that we have a little bit more time, is to really focus on Shonky John Key, because the fortunes of the National Party are very much joined at the hip with the fortunes of the New Zealand Prime Minister, ex-Wall Street bankster John Key, who's been the most stage-managed, packaged, spin-doctored person I've ever come across in my life. And what's happening is the mask is starting to fall and people are actually starting to guess that John Key's not actually really here to look after New Zealand mums and dads. He's actually still a Bank of America shareholder. He's got huge connections with his bankster mates. He's opening up New Zealand to overseas investors and banksters. That's whose interest he's serving. So wakey, wakey, folks. We want to do is to...
Just jumping in, I can't understand why the National Party can't see that.
Well, there's a brainwashing thing going on again, and that groupthink mentality. I had a couple of truthers drop around today. You know, just trying to sell me new power companies or new or donate to charities and what have you. And they saw my car with the stickers all over, and they go, "Hey, mate, are you in a conspiracy theorist? Oh my God, thank God!" You know, and he said to him, "Oh, you know, I'm part of this organization or I'm part of that organization." I said, "Dude, if you belong to somebody else, to another organization, it means that you belong to that organization, okay? You don't own yourself anymore. You don't have your own opinions. You don't have any of this. You have to do whatever the party line is. Same goes for whatever business you're working for. Same goes for whatever organizations you align yourself with. If anybody in that organization says anything, you know, you kind of have to back it." And those with mainstream thought and who don't expose themselves to the kind of information that we bring out on this show, who believe what the corporate media says, that kind of thing, it has of no surprise to me whatsoever that these people would not see through John Key, and indeed would think that anything that he says is absolutely in line with National Party policy, is in line with how it was founded, and blah, 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 because he's our leader, our dear leader.
Well, what I'd really like to encourage people to do at all times is presume nothing, check everything, and always seek truth from facts. And if you're looking to seeking truth from facts, always go to source. Now, a very simple thing that I did with dear old Shonky John Key, I double-checked, because back in November 1999, John Key, he was a foreign exchange advisor to the New York Federal Reserve. And at that time, you know, knew all the stuff, but others may not. But he was also head of derivatives, dodgy derivatives, for Merrill Lynch. Well, what happened in November 1999 was the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act. And, of course, the Glass-Steagall Act had been around since 1933 under Roosevelt. And it effectively put this big concrete wall between what was regarded as sort of safe and boring commercial banking versus risky and dangerous investment banking. Well, there had holes had started to appear in that concrete wall, but with the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, that came down completely, and the effect of that was to leave derivatives completely unregulated. And of course, the reason why we've got such a disaster now financially is the collapse of the derivatives market. So what I want to know is, while John Key was in that pivotal position at that pivotal time, what role did he play in the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act? How much has John Key personally responsible for this financial global meltdown? And I want that question asked in Parliament. I want one of the MPs to grow some balls, or maybe it'll be a woman, I don't know. But,
I think it's far more likely that the women will grow balls of their politicians. Helen Clark. Helen Clark's got balls, man. I'm like, seriously, she hides them in her Adam's apple.
Just another couple of things about what's happening with asset sales. As far as water is concerned, I mean, I've been media spokesperson for the Water Pressure Group. A media spokesperson back since 1998, and I've been quite involved in this issue. And people need to beware, because what the government wants to do is to set up a market in tradable water rights. We know how the markets work for electricity, disaster. We know how the market has worked for finance, disaster. We need a market in tradable water rights, like we need a hole in the head. Because the issue is you've got a river flowing, and then what happens is you've got farmers want to draw water off for irrigation, you've got industries that want to use water, you've got communities that want water for drinking water, etc. And the question is, who gets to access or to use that water in a fair and sustainable way? Because in New Zealand, it comes under the Resource Management Act, and it's sort of like first in, first served, and it's a bit messy, but I mean, the whole country has a real concern, or is going to be impacted upon by this issue. It's not just an issue for Māori. The issue of property rights for water affects every person in this country. We all need to be part of the debate, and National was never elected with any sort of mandate on a market for tradable water rights. And they didn't actually get a mandate for asset sales either. Because guess what? Do the math. There was 121 MPs. How many MPs did National get who campaigned on asset sales? They got 59. It was a vote of 61-60 that got the Mixed Ownership Model Act through, which allows for these asset sales. National had to have John Banks from ACT. They had to have Peter Dunn from United Future, or they wouldn't have been able to get the legislation through. So no majority. In my very clear opinion, is no mandate.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. And from the farming perspective, you talked about water rights and resource management. Neil, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, that's a nice curly question. Well, our own district council's busy starting to draw up its plans for its rivers and things. And yeah, I agree it's an issue we've got to look at, and because, you know, we've got to fairly allocate what's there, but it's yet another way for the spin doctors to sort of infiltrate and doctor the program up so that we end up having more and more controls. And I mean, it is at least one that I think the farmers are going into with their eyes open a bit better than some of the others at this stage. But there's, you know, it's a huge can of worms, and we're certainly watching it closely. All part of the picture.
But wouldn't you agree that this debate, that's the whole of New Zealand that needs to be consulted with on this one, not just Māori, not just select groups? Like they've been having these little forums to do with the issue of tradable water rights. Well, arguably the biggest stakeholder of the lot's the public. But of course, where are we involved in this? Hello?
Yeah, that was something that really irritated me as well, Penny. It's like, I'm not Māori, so I don't get consulted about what happens with my water. Penny, you're not Māori. I mean, come on.
Yeah, no. The thing is that, in terms of the view that nobody owns water, I totally agree that water is a commons. Every species depends on water to live. But the question is, how do you get access to it in a fair way? And the other huge issue, in terms of control and managing water in a sustainable way, why the hell do we use rivers as liquid tips? Why do we put poos and wees into the river? Why do we put discharge from industries and God knows what into the water? Why on earth do we use our water supply as liquid tips. That's, you know, hello, and we do that in New Zealand. Waikato River, when I did a lot of research, hundreds of hours of research way back in about 2003, there are about 2,300 point discharges where like the Resource Management Act, sort of like a license to pollute. You get a consent to be able to put this muck in the water. So there were like 2,300 point discharges where you could add crap in the river. But of course, then you have runoff off the road, runoff off the farm. Hello.
Yeah, it's a big can of worms, isn't it?